Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You're Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Daniel Ruhr, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. You wouldn't necessarily expect that a 2-point win over one of the worst teams in the league would elicit such a justifiably positive reaction, but that's where we are. The Warriors made a big comeback and ended up beating the Philadelphia 76ers 106-104. And the place to start, absolutely, is Draymond Green. Draymond was the linchpin of their defensive, not only their defensive effort and drive, but also their defensive execution. He was disruptive all over the court, was guarding whoever was around, and that wasn't only just on switches. There were a few moments, I think partially because he was trying to set the tone and partially because he thought it helped the team win, where he would pick up TJ McConnell in the backcourt and then just give him to Steph. So it wasn't like he was doing that and then taking the assignment. He was doing that just to slow it down, to slow the Sixers' offense down a little bit. And they needed every single possession of that effort. They needed every single little bit of his 6 blocks, of his 4 steals. And I'm a little bit sad that the SportView tracking data is not out yet because I feel like the hustle stats might be a little bit ridiculous, even though it was mostly in that one quarter. And I always think of defense as really being 3 basic components: personnel, effort, and execution. And the Warriors have differences this year versus other years in really all 3 components. So in terms of personnel, not only are they dealing with Kevin Durant being out for right now, but they're also dealing with just not having continuity, not having Festus Ezeli, not having Andrew Bogut, even Mo Spates. At least they knew what they were getting with him. And that really came through in the early part of the game where they were having issues with personnel. And then effort has also waxed and waned a lot this year. In the early going of this game, there were some flat possessions. There were some times the guys got beat, things like that. Some shaky transition defense periodically as well. And then the third part is execution. And that was actually the biggest failing that the Warriors had early on in this game, was particularly their centers were just getting beat consistently. They were either miscommunicating or they were reading the situation wrong. And while some of that can be attributed to the other two categories, I thought of it as mostly execution. And I don't know if this came across on the broadcast because I was at Oracle, but Draymond was pretty frustrated and affected by those mistakes, which were not just JaVale McGee. It was also Zaza Pachulia. And Draymond didn't really play much with David West in that first half, but David West had a few mess-ups himself. He actually had, I thought he was pretty bad in the first half, did better in the second. And so the Warriors structurally are down in all 3 of those components at the moment. And that's certainly a contributing factor into giving up 104 points to one of the worst offenses in the league. And I think it was over 90 in the first 3 quarters. I think it was exactly 90 in the first 3 quarters to the 76ers. And there are parts of that which will get better when they're, you know, a little bit less flat. Steve Kerr always talks about the first game after a road trip. That's really what this was. Functionally, I mean, they did technically, you know, they had that game at home, but really this did feel like a 7-game road trip for the team. And personnel is imperfect. It will actually get, not only will it get better when Kevin Durant gets in there, but it will get better when they go more to Draymond at center. And that was the silver lining I talked about early in the season when Zaza Pachulia was struggling so much before they changed some of their pick and roll coverages, and he struggled again today, but it was a little bit different, was the idea that the Warriors' best defensive lineups were those lineups with Draymond at center. And my theory at the time, and it's still a possibility, I don't feel as confident in it as I did then, that Coach Kerr not only recognizes that, but that realization would lead him to going more to Draymond at center when the moment presented itself. That was a big criticism of mine of his situation and planning last year. And they haven't gone a ton to Draymond at center. They actually did in the second quarter of this game when they were looking a little bit flat. I don't particularly remember how they did. I think it was kind of fine. And they went through kind of that phase in it, and then in the fourth quarter, it was absolutely massive. Kerr tried various different things through the other parts of the game to see what worked, to see what didn't. I commend him for that as an approach. I was actually very surprised that one of the wrinkles that they threw out there was at the beginning of the second quarter, they had Ian Clark in, they had Klay Thompson in, and they had David West. So those parts were all pretty much the same. And then Iguodala was in, and my surprise was that my theory was that Draymond made sense as the fifth guy if you're going with Clark at nominal point guard because he can handle the ball, he can initiate offensive possessions, he can grab and go, everything like that. And using Matt Barnes in that spot does basically the opposite because Matt Barnes, as was patently evident in this game, is not a good passer. He had a few just terrible ones. One was miscommunication. Klay zigged when he thought he was going to zag and Barnes just threw the ball straight out of bounds. No one could even touch it. And then he also had a horrendous outlet pass to Draymond, which was just, it was like 4 feet too far and Draymond couldn't corral it. And Barnes will get better at that, presumably, if he sticks around on the team. But it's a big difference between him and Draymond Green, who is one of the best passing forwards in the entire league. So I was a little bit surprised about that. The unit did okay. They weren't particularly bad out there. And I wanted to see that, and I actually asked Coach Kerr about it, about what he saw from some of the different things after it, and here's his answer.
Steve, you just talked about new combinations, tried out some different alignments tonight. What did you like and what didn't you like?
Well, I thought Matt Barnes was great at the four. You know, we're just more comfortable being able to play small at the four. And I thought he did a really good job. Andre obviously plays some at that spot too. But, you know, it was we were mixing and matching out there. We had a plan for the first half that we followed, and then the second half it was we just kind of played it by ear I decided to take Steph out the third quarter. I usually play him the whole quarter, but he was struggling, so I took him out early, left Klay in, and so we had to kind of mix and match and find some rotations that worked, and it may be like that for a few games, but hopefully we can settle in and find the right combinations.
That sounds about right. You know, just trying out some different stuff and that they wanted to do that in the first quarter. As I said before Kerr's quote, there was a difference to me in terms of using Clark and Thompson together without Draymond. But overall, you know, at least they tried something different. They only conceded 3 points during the 7 minutes that Clark played. And considering where the game was at that point, not too big a deal, especially considering they actually got through that without Curry and Draymond. So you had all that together and then they have this disastrous third quarter where basically everything goes wrong. The offensive execution was shaky. They were turning the ball over too much. The defense was bad in terms of execution and just in terms of effort. So they end up seeding this just gargantuanly bad after a small deficit, 31-20 quarter. And that 20 also tells you how bad their offense was. And so the arena is getting a little bit flat. Everybody's kind of a little bit concerned just because context matters here. And the Warriors were coming off of a 3-game losing streak. I think they'd lost 5 out of 7 and playing a team that is feisty, but not particularly talented. They had some guys who looked really great tonight. Dario Saric looked good. Timothy Luol-Cabarrot looked good. Julius Okafor scored a ton. And Rashawn Holmes, I still think Rashawn Holmes is their best center. He did a nice job overall. Was actually, I think it was +9 going into the very end of the stretch of the game. It ended +6 just because the Warriors scored a little bit at the end. And one of the other big differences that really shifted the second half was Okafor got bailed out. I can't remember if it was in the third quarter. It might have been the second. Nate Duncan pointed this out to me, that the Warriors were playing against Okafor without a lot of their best pick and roll guys. And by switching out the rotation, by having Curry and Draymond sit out the end of the third and then play the beginning of the fourth, the Warriors not only had their best pick and roll combination, they had their best pick and roll combination playing against a big man who can't defend that. And so they were able to use that bread and butter, which they don't use enough, to get reliable offense. And Curry still missed a few shots he normally makes, but he got a few, helped also turn the crowd. And offense and defense often feed together. I talk about the idea of feedback loops fairly frequently because I am a believer in it. And what the idea of feedback loops from the positive end, and this can go either way, is that success on one end of the floor fuels success on the other. Because if you're scoring a lot, let's turn it that direction. If you're scoring a lot, then it's harder for the other team to score because they're taking the ball out of the basket. And then you're getting more stops. And then that allows you to be more effective in transition. And the Warriors in 2014-15 and 2015-16, they were the kings of feedback loops. They would go on these runs and just absolutely demolish teams. That was a big part of what made the death lineup so special, was that they could really start that loop on either end. And it can go in the negative direction too. And I think there was a little bit of that in this game. And to my eyes, it was actually more in the early parts of this game, the defense sabotaging the offense than the other way around. It can be hard to discern at moments, but blown coverages, and also they were getting a little bit frustrated, frazzled, all that kind of stuff, that all fed together to create just this kind of awkwardness, and then that really boiled over in the terrible third quarter. And then Draymond keying the defensive improvements, getting those easier possessions offensively through the defense, but also through Philadelphia's defense not being as resilient and stout as it was earlier, really did all feed together and create a circumstance where they were able to come back. And yeah, I mean, they have a huge talent advantage on the Sixers anyway. I think they came back in about 6 minutes, something like that. And something that I wanted to make sure didn't get lost in the shuffle of this game, though, is that early on, Klay Thompson was the only real scorer that the Warriors had. And it's totally fair to give Draymond credit for keying the comeback, for being that player, for bolstering his defensive player of the year bona fides. All of that is true. But the Warriors do not have the opportunity to come back in this game if Thompson doesn't score 19 in the first half. And he scored 19. They were having trouble basically scoring in all different ways. And Thompson was not the guy who was getting to the line. That actually ended up being Draymond Green. The Warriors had 35 free throws in this game. And in a way that paralleled their game in Philadelphia, that helped sustain everything else. And that's not really a Warriors hallmark, but the Sixers foul a lot. They're a young team. This is the sort of thing that they do. So Klay's offensive foundation, he ended the game with 28 points, 10 of 22 from the field, 5 of 9 from 3. That was sort of Durant-y in the way that it wasn't necessarily consistent, because it's just the way Klay is, but it was effective. And that gave them a foundation offensively that allowed them to survive other players being less consistent, and made it so that it was a one-point game at halftime, as opposed to being substantially worse than that. And considering how they played in the third quarter, any worse would have been almost unsurvivable. So I wanted to make sure that Thompson got credit for that part of it. A few other kind of odds and ends insights from this game. I thought McCaw was fine overall. He wasn't great. The Sixers have kind of tough personnel for him, even at this point, because they're playing Covington, who's a talented three. He didn't have a great scoring night. And then just kind of weird combinations of forwards and bigs. Well, Cabarreau had a decent game, but I didn't think any of them really did so at the expense of McCaw. His reluctance to shoot came in a couple times, or, you know, a few opportunities that maybe he could have done, but I thought he was okay. He wasn't the culprit in what was going on, but he did happen to have a negative 15 because he wasn't out there. Pachulia was a much bigger culprit in that. His pick and roll defense was bad. Sometimes he was getting smoked. Even one-on-one, there was a play Jahlil Okafor in the first quarter just absolutely beat him, and that was something that didn't happen the first time they played. And that's not going to be Pachulia every night. He's done a pretty solid job overall defensively this year, and it'll be important to see what he does moving forward, because his role is going to shift if Draymond's going to play more minutes at center in the playoffs. His role is going to shift, whether that means he's playing more at the second unit, plays fewer minutes, or whether they go with the Andrew Bogut special, starting out with like 8 minutes at the beginning of each half, and then eventually that starts dwindling to like four. It could go either way. We don't really know at this point, but I'm intrigued to see how that all works out. JaVale McGee, similarly, I thought he was fine, but Steve Kerr still has this faith in James Michael McAdoo, which I feel is completely misplaced. There is the idea that he is better at switching and handling small guys than JaVale McGee, and that's true, but he's still not good. And that is not enough of an incentive to really play him more. And I also feel that those situations will largely resolve themselves when the Warriors get into the playoffs, because they can just go to Draymond at center more often than they do now. So then you can occupy the remaining true center minutes with Pachulia and David West, depending on how that works out. You know, and JaVale is available too when the seas are calm. Let's put it that way. I didn't think he was particularly bad in this, but Kerr uses McAdoo as a safety blanket for some reason, so I guess that's going to continue. And then Clark, I thought Ian Clark was fine in this game. They gave him that opportunity. Coach Kerr talked about it, answering my question, because they thought he had played really well on the trip. I agree with that he did, that he looked reasonably good there, but they didn't really give him that latitude later on in the game because they didn't really need it. They had Curry playing the entire fourth quarter, changed the dynamics a lot. And the other guy who really benefited a lot from the shifts that went on, and this was actually something that listeners of this show regularly will know that I've actually thrown out there and I've written about for The Athletic too, which is the idea that Livingston does not mesh particularly well with the concepts that they've used for the second unit this year. They have players now there who are more limited as shooters and who want the ball in their hands more, Iguodala, Draymond Green. And Livingston isn't great in that ecosystem, especially not with, you know, Curry on the floor. And when they would do it without Clay, that would really sabotage it as well. And they ran some really different lineups out there. And the Curry-Livingston-West trio, something Tim Kawakami noted, they looked really good together. I completely agree with that assessment. And Livingston, maybe you start going more in that direction. Coach Kerr talked about that after the game as well. I think Tim asked the question of, you know, maybe using him more like what they did in prior seasons, which was bringing him in, often for Klay Thompson, late in the first and third quarters, have him do that stretch. And then that would actually open up minutes for Ian Clark. You could do a few different interesting things with it and could even maybe pop in an extra rest for either Draymond or Andre Iguodala, depending on how they want to run that rotation. There are a few different options. Another time, I will beat this drum until this drum is dead, that David West could also be useful in the first and third quarters, as opposed to just relying on him so much in the second and fourth. He, in this game, only played 11 minutes, 11 seconds because of the change in the rotation and because he's not allowed to play in the first and third quarters unless it's against the Spurs when everybody else is sitting. So something else to watch. Matt Barnes was fine. I thought the ability to play kind of nominally the four is really helpful, so they can go with some different lineups, but the Warriors don't have so many wings that they can make that work frequently. He also had, beyond those two horrendous passes, one of the crazier moments in the game when he, on the, well, was the Warriors' last offensive possession of the game, really, he got a steal, or it was a throw ahead. I legitimately don't remember. And looked like, you know, the game's basically over. They have a 3-point lead and he just blows the dunk. And he said after the game that he should have pulled it out, that they should have done something differently. He's not a great enough free throw shooter where I think that it was a no-brainer call. He should just make the dunk. I mean, that's a completely fine thing to do. If it's possible that he could have, you know, done the equivalent of taking a knee and run the clock out entirely, then that makes your chances of winning 100%. But outside of that, you have to look at it differently. And then I also should mention on the last possession, the very last part of the game, Draymond, after the blown dunk, fouling Dario Saric basically at half court. If you can pull it off, that's a really smart thing to do down or up three, because it's so much harder for the other team to get 3 points starting that possession at the free throw line. They actually did a pretty nice thing with it of making the first free throw, missing the second intentionally and trying to get a shot. That is the best path, the best way to do it. Didn't pull it off, but that's what they were trying to do. They actually got pretty close to making it happen. So that was the right call. You run the risk, if a guy can realize it fast enough, of trying to get it as a shooting foul, but in that circumstance, it's not really going to happen because you're not going to shoot from half court, and refs are generally understanding of that. I think back to another one of those was Chris Paul trying to get a shooting foul at like three-quarter court in a playoff game, and the refs are like, no. You're not gonna pull that off. And they actually didn't even call the foul in that circumstance. And he ended up, it was kind of a costly mistake. I think it was against the Thunder. Could be remembering the series wrong. Might have been against the Spurs, but I'm rambling. No real point in doing that. But so the Warriors now, they are 53-14. I'm sure there are some who are thinking, oh, this is the pathway to getting the number one seed. I did a podcast yesterday, for those that didn't listen to it, about the difference between the one and the two seed this year. The primary concept, if takeaway, is that I don't think it's as big a difference as some are conveying. But also, beating the Sixers by two is not the greatest sign of anything like that. And Spurs already have Kawhi Leonard back. That was one way that I thought would open that up. That is far from saying the Warriors either have to or should foreclose on the possibility of getting the one seed. You still keep trying. You just don't rev the engine. You don't redline at this point, because there isn't really much of a point. You know, even with going a little bit hard in the fourth quarter, no Warrior played more than 37-51. Draymond played 37-51, so nobody even pushed into 38, and that's far above what they usually do. So full credit to the coaching staff for usually managing that pretty well. But that's enough for now. The Warriors will play again on Thursday night against the Orlando Magic, another team that is largely dead in the water, but still trying pretty hard. I have a couple wins recently. They beat Miami. So we'll see what Warriors team shows up that day. I'll probably do a podcast of some form tomorrow. I don't know exactly what it's going to be yet. I have a couple of different ideas, and so I'll figure that out when the time comes. So if you have any feedback, good, bad, or indifferent, DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com, @DannyLarue on Twitter. If you take the time to write it, I will take the time to read it. I do not promise to respond, but that's what I do promise. Also, if you want to check it out, I did something very different. For those of you who think of me as more the kind of straight-laced person, which also means you probably don't follow me on Twitter considering my terrible puns, but my sister and I have an annual tradition started about 10 years ago of doing a mascot bracket for the college, for the NCAA tournament. And starting about 3 years ago, we put it on Real GM Radio on my podcast. My boss at Real GM thought it was hilarious, encouraged me to put it on the show. And so that is a bonus episode that came out. There will be a normal episode working on the over-unders, and the Warriors will, of course, feature prominently in that, come out later in the week. So you can check that out as well. Standard pieces and the every player, which will be on the Athletic app, and the piece will be on the Athletic. By the time most of you listen to this, I am going to write it as soon as I finish here. So if you want to support the show, lots of different ways you can do it. Leave a rating, leave a review in the podcast player of your choosing. Also, you can subscribe, download every episode, and also spread the word, you know, whatever ways that you convey to people, if there are people that you think would enjoy the show, to reach out. I appreciate it. Anything helps, and I really do appreciate it. So thank you so much for listening. Take care, and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.